Yeah, Mr. Fixie's going to use big boy words now. So all you little boys and girls there, better run away.
Yeah, no, that didn't sound any better than what I heard. That sounded a little bit worse, in fact.
You said all those big boys there.
Okay.
So welcome to the Spawnometer, where we cover an issue of Spawn. 1 minute for every page the comic story runs. We're finally at the writer series, which Mr. Fixit, my co-host, has been anxious to get around to. So given that I talked way too much in the Brigade episode to the point where I was sick of editing it, sick of hearing myself, we're going to try to do a lot more Fixit for this episode. He's going to tell you about Spawn number 8. In heaven, everything is fine. Did you catch that reference?
No.
Have you seen Eraserhead, right?
A long time ago.
And then later on, the Pixies did their own sort of cover version of that song.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up now because I've just got franked. We literally just started the fucking podcast on being franked. So Spawn number 8 was written by one of my all-time favorite writers. I've been a huge Alan Moore fan since, I guess, Swamp Thing, which then made me go back and read some of his early stuff like Miracle Man. His Batman stuff was good. Green Lantern. I mean, hell, Geoff Johns owes his career to Alan Moore. Let's be honest. Everything Geoff Johns is built on was on the bones of Alan Moore's writing. Hell, even his Vigilante two-parter was pretty good. You know, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, stuff like that. Apparently, from what I've been able to gather, this was McFarlane's attempt to introduce writing into the book, since I'm assuming the first 7 issues were garbage, son. Garbage.
No, you're too hard on Spawn.
No, they were
especially,
okay.
Yeah, relative,
I went back and I pushed myself to realize that, look, each writer was trying to do something different, so they weren't all doing the same. Larson was doing a cop drama with superheroes. McFarlane was taking the supernatural route, and Silvestri and the rest of them went techno-babble. Gotcha. They wanted
a lot of paramilitary tech stuff.
So McFarlane's concept was great. Yes. Cool idea. Dialogue was bad. I think McFarlane is definitely the pitch guy. He definitely came up with a cool idea. Though, basically, let's be honest, just Spider-Man and Venom mixed together with supernatural powers.
I think you're somewhat diminishing. I think that Spawn was a better book, especially...
No. He became better, I think, whenever you started having these other writers start really creating the mythos of him. Alan Moore gave the Hell this cool concept. Because at that point, we just know about Mal Bulger, and that's it. And Hell.
And he does not have a name yet.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a name yet, and we know the Violator. And rereading the books, I realized, to me, Hell was just Hell. But when Alan Moore gets in there, it's Dante's Inferno, and each level's different.
There are elements of the Inferno.
They're 8 levels.
Right, but at one point it's described that they're actually spheres, and each
sphere, within a sphere.
And also, it doesn't parallel to the Dante. There's more bizarre, it's weirder, modern, too.
You have one plane of existence where they like souls who sing because that's like the end thing, and it's a fashion statement. Last year it was acrobats. This year they're like pets, and this year it's singing souls. And then there's another one where the souls are used as microchips.
Who is this issue dedicated to?
Dedicated to Don and Maggie Thompson.
Interesting.
Why? Who's it?
They are the husband and wife team that ran Comic Buyer's Guide.
Oh, okay.
They were pretty supportive of Image Comics. They definitely sold them a lot of ad space. If I remember correctly, the ad that launched Image Comics, The Exterminators, was in Comic Buyer's Guide. And it was really the newspaper of note for the industry. I'm also not sure when exactly Don Thompson died, but it may have been somewhere around that time period. I'm not sure, though. So that might have been what inspired that tribute.
Okay, so that was a proper franking right there. Thank you, Frank. We're introduced by the book by a character who we last saw being murdered by Spawn, Billy Kincaid, child murderer.
Issue 5, right?
Molester, murderer,
I don't know that he ever made explicit the molestation. The murderer, he molested the bodies not necessarily sexually, but with his ghoulish repurposing.
I think it's implied. He's forming into this protoplasm sack. I'm trying to think, what was that movie where you see the Pinhead. The name of the series.
Yeah, it's Hellraiser, yeah.
Hellraiser. Whenever Frank, the main villain, is coming back, and he comes back in pieces, like when they drop the blood on the mattress, and you see the brain and the spinal, and it's...
Well, I was thinking because it's a fluid-filled sack that's dangling, it reminded me a lot of the ones from The Matrix, where the actual birthing chambers in The Matrix...
No, I want to think that spider creature.
And while this is a little bit of wibbly-wobbly tummy-wimey, you and I recorded on the Cyberforce episode, and you were the ones who referenced The Matrix there. And so that's, I'm recalling that here, even though we won't talk about Cyberforce probably for another couple of episodes.
Billy is forming in this, he refers to it, I guess, as the garden, because they all, they feel like they're in, like plants. They're like fruit. They're forming out of these bulbs. They pop out. He feels all gooey. Like being naked. Apparently kills some poor little lizard creature, puts on its skin.
And tellingly, he also does the thing where he puts the skull atop his own skull to make himself appear as though he's a beast, to show how quickly he adapts to this level of savagery. Yeah.
He's a little concerned. He's not sure where everyone is at. And then all of a sudden, he's met by a group of travelers. And I love the fact that the female's like, "Hi, my name is Kimberly, and I used to be bulimic. And I died, and I woke up in a bulb." And you come to realize that all these characters have died. So it's Kimberly, I think some big dude named Bob.
Who's a trucker.
Some other dude. He owned restaurants.
Who's a cokehead. He OD'd.
Drug dealer. There was a black woman. What was her?
She was just religious. They said how she died.
Yeah, but what was her reason for being in hell?
They never really tell you.
Is it praying to a false god, or?
That's one of the things that's interesting about this story, is your expectation is that you're going to find out why all these people are in hell. I don't think they ever explicitly say that they're in hell. They're just in a weird...
It says they're in hell. The little girl... So there's a little girl with them, and I'm sorry, man. Even the first time I read this, when someone knows the shit that's going down around you, that's the one person you watch a little bit closer. If she's like, "Oh, that's Ugu Bugu from so-and-so level," you're like, "Oh, this bitch knows shit."
Something's up with this one.
Especially if she's like a fucking 6-year-old and she knows this shit. That would make me extremely nervous.
Well, they do explain, though, that the adult members of the group think that she's just tweaked in the head, that she doesn't actually know what she's talking about. That's part of it. So, at one point, Billy Kincaid refers to her as autistic.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does. He uses the exact term, yes. Because I remember going, "Ooh, that's kind of gross. I should have gone there with it," but okay.
Did you read a hard copy or the copy off the...
I read the same one you read.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You think that it's going to be like a Spectre story where they're going to tell you what they did to get to hell, and this is the punishment that's the poetic fitting end for them. The story thwarts that.
The window into heaven is really small.
Seemingly, yes.
Yeah, and the get to hell? Yeah, man.
But by the same token, though, Billy Kincaid never tells you outright why he's in hell. All those people end up perishing before
you find out at the end.
But the people that he was with never find out, because they're all taken up by monsters before they ever find out.
Well, right off the bat, they do all seem a little self-absorbed with what they did. You're kind of jumping ahead there, Frankie. As we're walking, this really awesome steampunk metallic angel looking creature appears, and the black woman in the group is like, "Oh, it's the Lord. I knew I didn't belong here. I knew I was destined for someone better. Comfort and joy, sweet and low, bright and beautiful. Who amongst you singeth these songs?" And of course she's like, "Oh Lord, I sing these songs." And she starts to sing hymns that I'm assuming she sang in church. The mechanic angel grabs her, and of course the rest of the group is like, wait, that's not an angel. Like, that she got an engine attached to her,
a
rocket
there on her legs. Yeah,
what's going on? The little girl comes up and says, "It was a soul trapper from the sixth sphere. They keep souls as pets there. It's a fashion thing. This year's singers, last year was acrobat." You're starting to get a sense that each level the demons want something different out of the souls are used for different things. Billy's sitting there and he's brooding because he still has that killer instinct in him, but he's not acting on it, because right now he's just happy to have the group of people around him. But he's having nightmares because Spawn is popping in his head. He's remembering how Spawn killed him.
They make a big point at the beginning of the story where it's like, I may have killed 28 children and
put
them
in freezers.
But I have constitutional rights, and they have no way of knowing that. And it was just wrong. This creature did this to me, tortured me, and he could have killed me. It's like, well, he did kill you.
Yeah.
And he's haunted by the images of Spawn
torturing him, killing him.
Despite the fact that he himself is a child murderer and torturer.
Yes. And so as the group is traveling through these spheres of hell, all of a sudden, this one I thought was kind of cool. So Larry's the next one. This beam of light appears and it hits Larry, and Larry begins to disintegrate. And of course, the little girl that knows everything comes out and says, "You don't see many of those. That was the Prime Mandoar from the highest sphere, the 10th. He handpicks souls to use as circuitry in his microcomputer. computers. Your friend's lucky. You don't have to actually see it. I love that Alan Moore does this thing where if you take a human and use it as a human component, every person who reads that is going to have this different vision in their head. I have a complete different vision than what, say, Frank would have. I love the visuals he creates with that simple little phrase of, oh, this soul's used for a component, for a part, for a computer. Can you guess what it is? And so Todd doesn't need to draw it. Todd can keep sticking to what he knows best, the character drawings and stuff and the Hellspunk. But I love that each sphere is so different, that souls are used so completely different, that they're not all just like, oh, it's food, or it's a pet, it's a component. We're almost like a utilitary hardware to heaven or hell. Mm-hmm. And the story moves pretty quick. It's not one that's drawn out each sphere. You get a taste of the sphere and you move on. The next one's pretty cool because then you have Bob, the trucker, who freaks out and goes, look, it's Elvis. It's Elvis. And they're trying to tell him, no, it's not Elvis. Stay back, Bob. But Bob runs up to Elvis and it turns out to be this big mutated creature that looks like Elvis. And he's holding him. The little girl always has to say something. There's nothing you can do for him. That's Chakagan Metabong from the fifth sphere. They get an addictive drug rush from the souls of people like Bob. Of course, I'm making up these names because they ain't no pronouncing this shit. Just this really weird concept for hell. Kimberly is kind of seen as a new age kind of chick where she's talking about, this can't be hell because all the times I channeled dead people, they never said it was like this. You know, she's talking about crystals. And at one point she sees a crystal and it gets up and it's a giant spider creature that absorbs her. And that one to me felt more like the Matrix because she's actually in it as it walks away. The kid tells me it's a soul garment from the third sphere that things are, say, you gotta love them. At this point, it's just Billy and the little girl left. Billy's still being tortured by images of Spawn.
He's looking for a familiar form of consolation. He's tired of feeling, I guess, disempowered by the Spawn. So it motivates him.
And finally, he starts to get that killer instinct back up. It starts to rise up in him. He realizes he needs to fulfill that bloodthirst that he has for killing small children, apparently. And he goes up to the little girl and he starts to choke her. At which point, the little girl looks at him with these big doe eyes and says, well, it's about time. I was wondering how long it'd be before you choke the know-it-all little bitch. I'm glad to see you still got what it takes, and it calls him Chili. The little girl's head splits in half and it's the Violator. And apparently they had been watching Billy the whole time. Hell, you could have a whole side story of how the Violator got pulled into this group of wandering souls. But again, I knew there was something up with this little girl when she knew all these different things going on. Only someone from there would know. And so the Violator basically starts to tell Billy, hey, we know what you are. You're exactly what we're looking for. If you want, I can ditch you at any level of hell you want. You can have any level. It's almost like, you know, choose your adventure type thing. Yeah, choose your end. He talks about the other levels of hell. Do you want to be a fur coat for some hyper intelligent ice shrimp from the second sphere? Or what about the third sphere? Honest, I understand. Getting filleted and served with a light pastry is what some guys like you like. I know that. I didn't get that one. Now, apparently there is one sphere that everyone is scared of, though. Like,
yeah, that nobody's ever seen.
Is that one mentioned in another book?
I don't have any recollection of that. Okay, obviously, the proceeds.
10. Let me know if that's what they're talking about.
10?
Issue 10, yeah.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Well, we'll get there. Oh,
I love this one, too. In the fourth sphere, the human soul is used as a fuel rod. Great writing. I mean, I enjoyed this one. It's not the best of his work, but it's definitely enjoyable. We get to the point where the Violator's trying to tell him.
Well, he's not a... He's part of
the Brother Five.
Fleabag family or something like that.
Brother Five.
And he's the Vindicator, as I recall.
Oh, I thought it was the Violator.
No, it's not the Violator. It's Violator's still on Earth, if I remember correctly. It's the Vindicator.
Cause they all look the same.
Because remember correctly, at the end of the first arc, Malbolgia forces Violator to remain in the clown form permanently and stay on Earth. So one of the other brothers, Vindicator, is the one who's taking Billy through the various spheres of hell. Because there's a gigantic spiral staircase, and they're basically working their way up to the ultimate level for
level 10.
The Fleabag brothers level, at least.
So let me let you... So, Frank, keep this in mind.
We're getting close to, so you need to start wrapping it up.
What do you mean? Okay, well, keep this in mind for the when you read that other one. It says, as for the seventh sphere, don't ask. It's the place called Imbrus. Imbus, but nobody's ever been inside. We figure it's some special hell for the most damnable creatures of all. And okay, so of course Billy's taken down to hell, and the Vindicator, or whichever the brothers it is, tells him, hey, you're here, you're gonna be part of Malbolgia's army. He's building up an army.
So does he actually say the word Malbolgia?
Yeah.
That character then.
Yeah. They mentioned Malbolgia because they're talking about how...
Because the level is the Malbolgia, isn't
army.
It? Or the
yeah.
area of that
well,
level?
Well, it's his army. He's talking about the suits, and he introduces Billy to his suit, which apparently they're living like Venom suits. I mean, they even say they're kind of like...
Yeah, it's going to bond with with you symbiotically for the rest of your existence, and it's going to attach to the central nervous system.
It,
kinda,
it talks to him a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, she really likes you.
Yeah. And so it bites into Billy, and next thing you know, Billy is now exactly what tortured and killing him, a Spawn.
Yeah. He's just a thicker version of the original Spawn outfit.
And at the very end, you just see a Billy sitting there kneeling before Malbolgia, who's laughing, and there's just an army of Spawns all around him. And that's how much the story ends. So it's just the story of Billy kind of giving you an idea of where the hell Spawns come from. I personally feel this is where the Spawn books pick up. Like, I know you make...
It definitely gives you a much better feel for the architecture of the Spawn-specific hell.
You bust my balls because I shit on the first seven. But these three books, to me, are the building blocks of where Spawn leaps off into the next 100 so issues. Like, that kind of gives him the springboard. Because honestly, until these books, I was ready to drop Spawn. I didn't particularly care for it. But then I read these and I was just like, oh shit, this is where we can go with it? And we didn't. But still, you know, the promise was there. The twinkle in his eye. So I was excited, but yet disappointed when the books never really lived up to their potential at this point. Because by the time these books run, he's running into all those legal problems, right? With all the different writers and...
No, and not yet. Not yet. No, that's a ways away. This is still early going, yeah.
Because, I mean, this is when Medieval Spawn comes out, and I was ready to read that.
Well, as part of the writer series, yeah. There were headaches related to that, but that's really going to be more in the Angel episode.
This is where Spawn in my world took off, because then all of a sudden, it wasn't just Al Simmons. You had Viking Spawn. You had all these Spawns that were going to start popping up, and the toys popped up with them. And like, so it was a world, to me, this issue was the world builder where these writers were like, this is what you can do. And then it took off, because I don't think McFarlane ever had a fucking,
he wouldn't have necessarily gotten to these places without the help.
Not. I think he would have just had his fucking Spider-Man Venom ripoff, run around shooting powers. But these guys were like, well, look, dude, I mean, in the next issue, when we get introduced to Angela, that takes this book into a whole other fucking world. And so when we get there, we'll talk about that. Because it was smart for you to tell me to read those three together, because they really complement each other real well. I think this podcast should have been those three together, because they complement the fuck
out of each other. Yeah, we're doing one at a time, because that way we can do some other stuff. Plus, the Spawn individual issues are good to varying degrees, where some of the material we cover around it has not been that great. So we need some more positive stuff. It's one of the reasons why I didn't talk very much in this episode, because I didn't like this comic. So we'll address it.
One?
No, I never liked this one. I didn't like it the first time I read it, and I didn't like it this time when I reread it. I didn't want to get into that because it would derail it. And because it would be negative.
I want to know why.
I just don't think it was very interesting. I thought it was kind of boring, honestly. It didn't do anything particularly poetic or interesting for me. The images that are conjured up didn't really excite me the way that Orson, when he would do that kind of stuff in his books, I'd be like, well, what does that look like? What is that? What is he talking about? Where with this is, oh, it's just ice prawn. You're going to be a fur coat of an ice prawn. It just doesn't do anything for me. I really felt like this was Alan Moore cashing a check. I think that he did good stuff in Image Comics, a lot of good stuff, in fact. And he did good stuff with Spawn. I just did not like this particular story.
I enjoyed it just because it's everything I thought Spawn could be.
Chicago. Ordinary cops were losing the battle. The criminal mastermind called Overlord and his super freaks held our city in their terrifying grip. Then a miracle happened. When I found him, he had no memory of his past. I helped him find an identity and a life. Now we have a fighting chance.
Well, we'll put the music from the USA TV show again.
How did that? Okay.
I don't really remember. It wasn't as much
dragon,
a song.
Savage Dragon.
Yeah, I don't think he got a song. I think it was more like the Savage Dragon. He patrols the city streets of Chicago, and you know that's the kind of. He's like them telling
you
the story.
He's the Obama of comic books. Okay. Obama's from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Law and Order. He's he saved the world.
If you say so, sir. I don't. He's not really a Law and Order kind of associate. association there necessarily.
Really?
Obama, not really like a big Law and Order kind of dude. No,
he's I guess to us minorities, he was.
He's like a community organizer. Yeah, and bullshit. So it's not like when you say Law and Order, I'm picturing like Nixon
martial law.
And yeah, like whenever you talk about those Law and Order types, it's usually fucking crypto fascists and shit. You know, we're gonna bring Law and Order back to this country, and what they're really talking about is we're gonna suppress minorities and shit like that. So
I always wondered, like, what would have happened if Savage Dragon didn't become a cop, like mm-hmm. any other career. So at the very beginning, he doesn't want to be a cop. So what happens if he's like a garbage man?
Right, he's working in a warehouse when he starts.
He works at like Safeway or some shit like that. Construction work site, because that's usually where they put them. Strong guys. So
he would have ended up in some showbiz capacity. You can't walk around with green skin and a giant fin without somebody wanting you to like open grocery stores or something. You know, he was a reasonably decent looking guy given his peculiar makeup. So at some point, he'd have been in action movies or something.
You think so?
Because let's face it, when they turned him into a cop, he didn't get any real training, and yet he was still a total badass superhero.
I'll tell you everything you need to know. I'm Dragon. I'm a cop.
So right now we're about to read the miniseries to Savage Dragon, created, written, drawn, inked, birthed, and I would say all around amazing guy, Eric Larson. It is an Image book with a Malibu Comics stamp on the very bottom.
We are introduced to the Savage Dragon. He's beating the hell out of two villains, like Cutblade and some chick.
Cutthroat.
Which I was kind of shocked. They actually showed Dragon punch a chick in the face. Dead on punch. I was like, whoa, that's, I don't remember reading that the first time around, but a lot of moxie there.
Yeah, and you're very aware that it's a woman.
Yes. Larson's artwork has always been phenomenal. I've always loved his artwork. I remember some of the Incredible Hulk issues I've read of his stuff. And out of all the Image books, I mean, this book, just the opening page, is fucking bloody as hell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
he came out swinging for the fences.
Yeah, a lot of the Image books were still a little coy. They were more violent than Marvel stuff, but they didn't go all out right off the bat. A lot of them became increasingly violent, I think, in competition with one another. But with Larson, immediately, here's big fucking titties.
Dude, he came out.
Here's thong. And here's blood, and yeah.
Dude, he came out with Lucy the baseball bat and just went to fucking work on everybody. Now, the one thing I was sitting here thinking about is there any character you feel Dragon was influenced by?
Well, one of the reasons why I read the book, Savage Dragon was one of the image books that lasted longer on than any of the other ones, buying it as a monthly comic book. I bought the entire first miniseries, and then I read the ongoing series for a period of time
I think I stopped at like 112, 115.
Three digits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I made it through single digits. Really? I didn't make it into the teens, but I stuck with it in part because it reminded me a lot of Martial Law.
Yes.
Because of the ultra violence, because of the character designs, and there was a kind of a Kevin
anti-hero. I'm looking for a hero type.
Right. Well, he's a cop where all these other people are a bunch of amateurs and jackasses who are using their powers incorrectly. So he's the law. He's authorized to kick their asses. But as I read more about Larson's influences, I could see that they both probably owed a big debt to Chester Gould's Dick Tracy. Certainly in studying it in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, the different villains.
A broad variety of grotesqueries,
yeah.
The heavily cop oriented, because when you think about it, Martial Law, while he was a duly authorized representative of the local government in this futuristic dystopia that he's in, he dresses like a Nazi, but he's a lone wolf.
He's Dirty Harry.
Where Larson's character is dressed as an actual beat cop. He hangs out with other cops. The bureaucracy related to the Chicago Police Department is important to the stories. You very much get that. And so in that way, it's much more like Dick Tracy. And not only do I think Larson is a comics historian, he's a guy who's got interest to go back to the Golden Age, but also I think he really liked the DC tabloids from the 70s, and a lot of the stuff that he likes, like Captain Marvel, and Dick Tracy got tabloids back in the 70s, which was probably one of his entry points. Plus, if you think about it, the Dick Tracy movie had come out only a year or so before Savage Dragon, and there was a lot of buildup around that too. There's a lot of evidence that would suggest that Dick Tracy was a pretty major influence on the entirety of Larson's career, but certainly on Savage Dragon.
Eric Larson really knew how to create a great rogues gallery for Savage Dragon. He had all these different villains. Some of them were throwaways like Basher, but for the most part you had these really cool doubleheader, Maiko, the killer shark guy, mm-hmm. Overlord. Like, he created this great rogue gallery of characters. Like, I kept coming back to the book. I think where I got a little lost is when it did the Mars Attacks. I started kind of wavering on that book a little bit that time, but I mean, there's literally just one panel of ass. He did not shy away.
You know, now something they do judge Eric Larson on is the TNA.
Yeah.
He's a man who enjoys drawing large breasts and thonged booties, and so the chick chick is exactly like that. And then he proceeds to punch her in the face. So you've got a sexualized character who is then violated in assault. So there's a tense to link those two, and then it makes you more uncomfortable than it would be when you're just punching random dude.
I like to believe that Dragon was a equal opportunist.
Yeah.
You know, all genders are the same. They all get an ass whipping the same. So I appreciated that. I appreciated that equality.
I will say, too, I thought Cutthroat was a cool looking villain with all the skulls and the pointy thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah. The dreads and the eye patch. Erik Larson does not shy away from violence during the battle. I mean, it's beautifully drawn, lots of action, but you get a sense that this book is not your typical Image book. There's blood everywhere. There's, you know, not deaths.
It's actually the prototypical Image book, because all the books became more like Savage Dragon as they progressed. Most of them, particularly in the Homage sector, were much cleaner, much more sanitary, much more like transposed from Marvel to Image and kind of doing the same thing. Where Larson took full advantage of not having to deal with the Comic Code Authority anymore and went for it, and a bunch of the other guys went for it over time as well. But he was ahead of the game on that front. He pioneered what became something of an Image staple, especially among Liefeld and McFarlane. They all went for that gorier quality as they moved forward.
They came out more family friendly in the beginning, you're saying?
I don't know if that goes so far as to say family friendly, but definitely more sanitary violence. Where Larson went for the tits and ass and blood and guts earlier than anybody else, and they all sort of started to follow suit over time. Once he could get away with it, they wanted to do it too.
Now, the thing that always got me about Savage Dragon was, now that I'm rereading this stuff, when you go back and you look at all the books, I know you hate when I say it, but you know, Spawn is Spider-Man Venom, Cyber Force is the X-Men, Wildcats to a point is the Avengers / X-Men. Like, they're all
built... More X-Men.
Yeah, more X-Men. But they're all built off these other groups, where Savage Dragon is just its own property. Like, I can't think of a book...
Which is funny, because everybody was like, oh, that's just the Incredible Hulk ripoff. Superficially, yeah. I mean, you had the whole war of words between Peter David and Erik Larson. They were fighting with each other constantly. They both took swipes at each other in their respective books. But the fact is, aside from being a big green guy, Savage Dragon is not the Hulk. To some degree, he was, because Peter David had been writing the Intelligent Hulk for a while at that point. But as much as I love Peter David's writing, and as much as I love that period of time too, it's kind of not the Hulk.
Oh, it's not.
When he's well adjusted and he's working with the organization.
They're nothing alike.
The Hulk has a problem
because he can't find his place in humanity. He's constantly fighting with humanity because they won't leave him alone, but he wants to be part of them at the same time. Savage Dragon doesn't have that problem at all. He shows up and people are like, it's a fucking dragon. Who cares?
They've established that in Chicago there are so many freaks running around anyway. And they actually turn, this is a book where
they've had heroes like Mighty Man and Super Patriot.
It's funnily enough, it's like we talk about the whole red state, blue state divide. When you live in a dense population area, a major city like New York, Los Angeles, Houston, Chicago, you're just a much more open-minded about things like immigration and mingling of races, mingling of cultures. You're usually tend to be more socialistic because you're living in a society where there are all these different vectors, all these different people with all these different agendas, and you have to work together to make everything work or else your city falls apart. Whereas out in the sticks, they tend to be all tribalistic. They're not used to a variety of cultures. They're not used to having to compromise the way that you do in the city. And they're just much more suspicious. And it's funny because the Savage Dragon kind of reflects that in Chicago specifically, more so than any other place in the Image universe. It's a city of freaks. There's tons of people. They refer to them as freaks. They're not the cool models like you've got in Wildcats and Cyber Force. These are funky, freaky creatures, and they've proliferated in this area, but the people are used to that, so they don't freak out over the freaks. In fact, they need a freak of their own. That's why they're happy to recruit Savage Dragon, who, relative to a lot of those freaks, is actually pretty normal. Aside from being a green guy with some funky proportions and a fin, he's just a dude, regular kind of guy, and they can relate to them, and they respect him. He gets the job done, and they need him desperately, given that they've lost so many heroes to freaks and mobsters.
Mm-hmm. So many freaks turned to crime. Why didn't you?
Well, that could have been me out there. It's hard when you don't fit in. Freaks don't fit in.
But you made a choice.
Oh, yeah, I made a choice. But I had help. Frank took me in a year ago, got me on the force, taught me everything I know. Taught me it's not human or freak that matters. It's good or evil.
You ever wonder where you came from? Before Frank found you, I mean?
Is it who you were that's important, or who you are?
Youngblood is out, and they've established that the superheroes, the celebrities, the people that everybody admires, they're all Youngbloods. Even if they're not members of the team, they're thought of in those terms. The guys who aren't pretty, the guys who aren't seen as beneficial to society, and aren't models, and aren't appearing on magazine covers, they're freaks. And the freaks, at this point, only appear in Savage Dragon. Chicago, specifically, is freak capital. And they've become like mobsters. The 1930s all over again, but it's superpowered beings instead of genre.
I was found in the middle of a raging inferno, Basher, so I think I can take the heat. Heck,
The explosion might even cure my amnesia.
So in the book, we come to realize that Dragon was just basically found in an empty lot, covered in flames, butt naked.
He's found by a Chicago police officer. I believe his name was Frank.
Yeah, the black dude.
Yeah, African-American.
So his origins are, at this point, unknown to us.
Yeah, he just shows up.
He just shows up. He's in a hospital. There's an officer named Frank that's introducing himself to him. They're talking. This was the cool thing. Dragon knew what was on TV last week, but couldn't remember his birthday.
He could Which tell is not you, uncommon for amnesiacs, actually. I think that Larson actually did some research on amnesia. That's very common, as you'll remember these general facts, but it's stuff specific to your life and people in your life. That's what you lose. You forget your mom's birthday, but you remember, you know, sometimes something is like a password, you know, to get through onto a computer or something. You'd remember. It's just like a different type of memory, that very intimate personal memory versus this more general sort of thing.
We're not going to know anything about him or his past because he can't remember any of that, but he can remember everything around him. Who's the president? Who was on his TV show? So as they're talking, Frank is trying to recruit Dragon. Well, actually, he doesn't have a name at this point. No one knows what to call him, but he's trying to recruit him.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, a nurse
called him Dragon. He said, "What'd you call me?" She goes, "Dragon." He's like, "I like that." And then Frank walks in and goes, "Yeah, call me Dragon." He's like, "Okay, Dragon."
So there are all these old superheroes, specifically an analog of Captain America called Super Patriot and an analog of Captain Marvel called Mighty Man. Shazam, Captain Marvel. And specifically, Mighty Man is outright killed in battle against Freaks in that first issue. Later on, you hear that Super Patriot has just been mauled. A big patriotic hero with an American flag cape.
Yeah, his arms and legs are smashed.
Right, he was just completely demolished. He got the RoboCop treatment. What's his name? Murphy. He got murphied.
Was it by Marco, the Shark Man, I think might have done that. And it was doubleheader.
All the big heroes that have been around for decades, because both those guys were supposed to have been active since the 1940s, because they're very strong analogs. They're exactly those characters. The Freaks are just taking over. So here's this Freak that shows up, seems like an okay guy, and Frank's like, "Come on, can you help us? We're losing all our heroes."
They're trying to recruit him to be a police officer, and he's not feeling. He's like, no, I don't know what's going on with me. I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, this isn't my fight.
Basically, he just wants to figure out what's going on. Frank introduces him to his cousin, who has a spare room, runs a warehouse. Dragon is in there one day, and we're introduced into the Vicious Circle, which is a gang of Freaks that is organized by one head boss or kingpin, Overlord, which we don't know yet. We just see these roaming groups of Freaks committing crimes. They decide to rob Frank's cousin. In the process, Dragon jumps in and beats the shit out of him. They get arrested. I believe it was two of them too. There's all these little stories going on. You know, this group of Vicious Circle guys come in. And of course, Larson's design of his villains is fantastic. This skull.
Yeah, he's a cool looking dude.
I mean, he's a ginger skull. I don't know what the fuck. I can't remember.
A skull with hair. Red hair. Going back to like Phantasma from the old, back in the 1940s. It's just a cool visual, a skull with hair. And throwing that red hair with the armor, there's just so many weird contrasting elements there that it makes
me. I thought it was supposed to be Ghost Rider. I thought the hair was supposed to be like a flame. Mm. Like it always felt like Larson was poking, because there's a part where he definitely takes some swipes at people. Like he's taking shots at people in the book. But it's almost like, well, if you have a flaming skull that's this, well, mine's going to have a flaming red hair kind of skull look. Because I mean, who would put long red hair on a skull, dude? It's just so fucking weird. Savage Dragon just beats the living shit out of both of them. They get arrested and they promise revenge. Frank's cousin's even pissed with Dragon because he's like, look, all they wanted is money. Now they're going to want more. And Savage Dragon's like, don't worry about it. Look, I'm going to protect you. And just as he's promising his protection, boom, building gets blown up. Frank's cousin is killed. All you see now is Dragon, butt naked, covered in flames. And he's like, damn. Frank's at home. There's a knock at the door. It's Dragon naked. Tells Frank, you know what? I'll do it. He's like, oh, and by the way, your cousin's dead. Still working on the dialogue.
I'm a legal machine.
Apparently, Savage Dragon doesn't have to go through the academy. He's just going to become an officer.
And I just get so tired of the 80s style. Savage Dragon's so cool. He rides
America.
Up. Yeah, there's a lot of that where you've got all these other beat cops around and they've got their regular size pistols and he rolls up and he's got a fucking Uzi. It's like beat cops don't get to run around with Uzis, motherfucker. And there's a lot of stuff where he's got his sunglasses on and the red sky at dusk is behind him and he's just striking all these fucking poses. And what it reminds
Jerry
me of
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Very Jerry. Sunset. Rock Armor, but specifically Cobra. Savage Dragon in the first miniseries is fucking Cobretti. Everything but the fucking match at his mouth. But you remember how Cobra was just so ridiculously over the top? And if you try to watch it today as an adult, you're like, this shit is such a cartoon. Cobra is such a ridiculous concept.
It was based off of Beverly Hills Cop.
Or no, it was his like rewrite of Beverly Hills Cop, right? Yeah. But it's like, oh, there's an army of serial killers who clang axes together as their salute to one another, and this whole secret society of serial killers is going to stalk this one chick and a cop, and the cop's driving around in a vintage Nash and blowing everybody away like he's Dirty Harry, and just that whole cock out America attitude.
I'm sorry, you just described a very fucking awesome movie to me.
I thought Cobra drove a Cobra.
I thought it was a Nash.
I thought Cobra drove an AC Cobra.
Maybe
a Shelby Cobra.
You were the car guy. You know better than I do.
I don't know. I was like eight when Cobra was on TV. So.
But when I was reading it and I was younger, that shit was like, yeah, cool. Maybe because I was closer to the 80s and closer to the mentality that can appreciate that.
Testosterone in you.
Where today when I read it, it's like, what a fucking bunch of overcompensating bullshit.
You're like, it's so uncouth.
Yeah. But I still love martial law. And I think that I think I enjoyed the fact that Savage Dragon reminded me of martial law, and I was so hungry for more martial law, and there wasn't a lot out there to begin with, and there wasn't a lot being produced at that time. A little bit afterwards, I think, is when they had the revival at Dark Horse.
Well, but see, to me, like, martial law is like Apocalypse Now. It's this very dark, gritty story where Savage Dragon is more like Gomer Pyle. Like, it's...
No. Yeah, now you're being cutie. Too diminishing.
No, I like Savage Dragon. I want to go back and reread it because it really didn't get darker till later on. Come on, in the beginning it was
bubblegum. Okay, if it was martial law is fucking Full Metal Jacket, then Savage Dragon is Missing in Action with Chuck Norris. It's a different mindset.
But dude, it was very Marvel.
Yeah, but like, yeah, martial law was very Marvel. I remember
it was very Marvel. You had the hero go after the villains. The villains had a plan. It's not like, I mean, martial law is completely different. That was, you know.
Well, yeah, no, that's exactly it. Martial law was satirizing and attacking the mindset that Savage Dragon was embracing. But because the superficial similarities were there, I was still able to get off on Savage Dragon, even though it was pretty much diametrically opposed to the intent of martial law.
And see, me personally, I think the first part of the series, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't really into it. I really didn't get into it until it got darker. I know I'm getting way ahead of you, but that's when I was like, okay, this is something I want to read.
Yeah.
And then when the Mars Attack series, I'm like, wow. Like, he was doing shit that was so weird and different because everyone else, I mean, let's be honest, Image in the early days was either Marvel or DC.
Like, very clear, direct analogs. Well, again, calling him out on Super Patriot and on Mighty Man.
If you were picking up a Marvel book and you picked up an Image book, I mean, you were going to kind of get the same thing. Yeah. No one was going to go.
Well, and everybody was calling out Savage Dragon as a whole ripoff too. Yeah. Right from the beginning.
True.
Were you talking about the television show Cobra or the movie Cobra?
The movie Cobra.
What so television show is Cobra?
Wasn't Dudikoff in a television show?
No.
Yeah, but not Cobra. They didn't do an adaptation of Cobra, did they?
Pretty sure.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about the one from the 90s that Howard Chaykin wrote for?
Well, Sly drove a Mercury Monterey.
Okay.
The Cobra TV show was a Shelby Cobra.
Oh, wait. Oh, you're talking about that. Yeah, Howard Chaykin wrote for that TV show in the early 90s. I think it was on NBC.
Howard Chaykin, guest of the show.
Yeah, cool dude. But yeah, so we're talking about two. I'm talking about the Sylvester Stallone Cobra. So that totally different, except apparently they both have cool cars.
This is the Chicago Police. We have you surrounded. Surrender now or we'll be forced to call in the dragon.
Anyway, so Savage Dragon decides to help the police, but he kind of goes at the whole 1980s Cobra slash Commando.
He's definitely Cobretti in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's running around with machine guns. There's actually an image here.
Yeah, he's supposed to be like a beat cop. He's new to the force, running around on a motorcycle with Uzis and like sunglasses.
There's literally a panel of just nothing but red and yellow of all the gunfire. There's so much gunfire.
Before I forget, too, let's give kudos to Chris Eliopoulos' lettering and Gregory Wright's coloring. This is a great looking book.
Oh, yeah.
Everything absolutely complements beautiful. Everything else. All of it works so well together.
Beautiful looking book. At this point, there's a female officer, which I think she had a recurring role in the book. Because I think he bangs her somewhere down later on in the book. But then we're introduced to Star, which was his
Spider-Man
but has long hair, which makes no sense. He's like, hey, I'm Star. I'm just a citizen like you trying to make a difference. Star, his main purpose is to show up and say, yeah, I just saw you shoot all those machine guns and not kill one person. Good shooting there, everybody. As much as there is violence and death, I think they were playing up the fact that Dragon won't kill people.
Yeah.
Dragon will wound people. He'll disarm them, but he doesn't murder. He has a code.
As far out on the ledge as Eric Larson was, there's still a bit of a tippy toe in the water to make sure it was going to be okay.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, dude, when you walk in with two machine guns gunning down at like 30 dudes, and apparently you only shot them in the arms and the handgun, because there's panels, you see the guns getting hit with bullets. So apparently Dragon is one hell of a shot.
This is the same school of thought that Wolverine can run around with 3 foot long blades sticking out of his fists and never actually connect in a way that's lethal to anybody.
True. Overlord tells the Vicious Circle that they can go ahead and take care of him, you know, handle it. It's still under the radar for him. It's not, I guess, interrupting the Overlord's plans.
Arachnid finally meet famous Dragon. Arachnid think Dragon not so tough. Arachnid want Dragon to know his assassin.
We're introduced in the second issue. Right off the bat, we have this awesome Spider-Man ripoff, which they actually say a Spider-Man-type character named Arachnid or some shit like that.
Yeah, well, he's the Spider-Man is having me for dinner tonight kind of Spider-Man.
Yeah, I creep.
He's an actual, like, spider-human being who eats people like flies and stuff like that.
Dude, it's fucking fantastic.
He's in a sewer, right?
Yeah, fucking beautiful details. You see humans tied up in webs, and apparently he's been doing this for a while. The whole theory was, we don't have muscle to take guys out like this, so they just let it keep continuing. It doesn't look good for the cop. They can't even fight these kind of monsters. They
just have to leave that area alive. Don't get too close to the sewers where he's going to drag you under because we can't do anything about it.
So Savage Dragon goes under and he just puts an ass beating. Beats that ass. Everybody congratulates Dragon. Thank you for helping us. This is the issue where the nurse calls him Dragon. Why do you call me that? And she points out because of the fin. So he wants to be called Dragon. Now Frank is having problems though. He's having some issues. Super Patriot is down. There's all these super freaks everywhere. He's not sure if Dragon is going to be able to be enough for this tide of villainy that's coming at him. I was a little thrown off by the scene where Dragon is at the firing range and he's firing the gun and they're like, holy shit, 5 shots in one hole? That's amazing. How did you do that? And he's like, look, I don't know. I'm like, he basically is freaking out. So that shows me there that Dragon's not really stable yet. I don't know if you want him to be a cop if he's not that stable yet. If he's freaking out over a simple question, he's like, okay, I'm sorry, you know, calm down, Dragon, relax. And at that point, we're reintroducing to Super Patriot, who's coming back, and he's a badass.
Super Patriot comes back as a cyborg who's been rebuilt by Cyberdata, which is interesting because Cyberdata was created by Mark Silvestri for the Cyberforce series, but Cyberforce hasn't come out yet. Because he's been rebuilt as a cyborg, he doesn't have control of his body. He's basically being used as a puppet by Cyberdata.
Have they done that shot yet where he has the impossibly heavily rendered male crotchular area? Like,
yeah, with the giant star in the middle.
Yeah, the most ornate gooch I've ever seen on a dude in a comic book. I mean, because it's a robotic, he's cybernetic, so they're just really getting deep into his taint to make sure you see all the detailing. That crotch shot, man. Yeah. That is the most masculine crotch shot in any comic ever, it seems like.
Especially when you got a star down there, dude.
Draws your eye to that particular region.
There's an absolutely pornographic shot of Super Patriot where he's just sitting in a chair with his legs spread. I'd never appreciated, because he's such a cartoony artist, I'd never appreciated how strong Larson's anatomical detail was back then. Dude, man, you're spending way too much time in this dude's area. But it was very well rendered, and he clearly had been looking at guys like Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri because he was incorporating a lot of that same sort of cross-hatching technique. And I tend to forget just how detailed Larson's artwork was back then. The basics of his artwork haven't changed. The general look is the same, but just the level of detail that he packs into the artwork, I'd forgotten how much he put into it at that time period.
For some reason, though, even the nurse, every chick in this book is like smoking hot. Larson draws giant Amazon looking.
Yeah, he knows what he likes. Everybody has big tits, big ass.
They're wearing
big
like the
hair.
Shortest shorts, ass cheeks hanging out from left to right.
And even the nurse, she's dressed up in the cute little all white nurse outfit with the little cap that nobody's worn in decades. But it works great if you're a fetishist.
Dragon meets his neighbor, who's a smoking hot blonde in tiny shorts, who lives with her mom, and
she's jailbait.
She's only there because, you know, money's tight, nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. His beeper goes off. He shows up. And even the female officers are hot in this thing. In Eric Larson's world, I don't think there's a chubby chick. Unless she's a villain. The Vicious Circle had decided to kidnap people and hold them hostage until Dragon showed up. Some of these people are dead. You see puddles of blood underneath their body. There's Mako. There's some guy named Basher. And I don't know the other dude's name with the spikes. So he shows up.
Isn't that like Killrazor or Hellraiser or
something
like that?
They're all Razor something.
Yeah.
Just Razor and then Edward here. So Savage Dragon shows up and the female officer's
definitely
like...
Definitely more thought was put into the visual design, renaming. Yeah.
So Savage Dragon shows up, and the field officer says, "Hey, guy, they're bulletproof, so those guns are useless." So he's like, "Eh, fuck it." So he tosses the guns. He goes in there. He's about to start battling them. He starts beating the shit out of them, and they do this shit where they just start throwing people at him. They're just flinging humans. So he's screaming at the people to like go limp, you know. And he's trying to capture them, and they're just—he's catching some of them, but there's other ones who are just like thump, thump, thump. I'm just assuming like wet bags of concrete smacking into the ground, and he's catching some, not all. He's angry.
Definitely a nightmare hostage situation.
Yeah, dude, I mean, there's in the background, there's just bodies falling. It's horrific. He jumps at the one villain, and the villain has a kid by his hair, puts him up like a shield. Dragon does at in mid jump,
in mid leap, yeah, mid air.
He flips, lands on the other side, grabs the villain, slams him on the ground, starts to put a beat nut ass, even Mako, Basher. He's beating them all up. He's getting his ass handed him pretty good, and all of a sudden, Super Patriot kicks in the door, comes in, and just fucking lights up the room. Basher gets his head blown off. The others are shot. Dragon tries to stop him. Super Patriot is more machine than man now. He's assuming he's being attacked and that this is one of their rookie henchmen. So he begins to beat the shit out of Dragon, and he's doing a pretty good job of it. At which point the female officer runs in, tells him to freeze, that he's a cop, and Super Patriot starts freaking out.
Does not compute.
Malfunction. At which point Dragon does the double Hulk punch, knocks him out, which the Hulk is done. If I remember, I actually own a piece of artwork where the Hulk is smashing.
Well, it's closed fist either side of the head, right? Yeah.
That's the Hulk move. Super Patriot goes down. Up to this point, we thought that Dragon was invincible. All of a sudden, he's like, too much blood. He passes out. And
because he was getting chopped up even before Super Patriot showed up. Yeah.
But at this point, even I thought he was bulletproof. And turns out he wasn't bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, the red blood really contrasts well against that green skin, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the last shot is literally everyone is in a gray tone or purple tone. And the only color you see is Dragon, the blood, the pink floor, and the officer. The officer who's like, oh, God, no. And that's how the second issue ends, is did Dragon get killed? Which now takes us to the third.
Worth noting, Eric Larson has a better time with ending comic books than people will get.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, there's definitely, that definitely has a cliffhanger. I mean, we know he's coming back, but still.
To protect and serve, or to wreck and destroy?
Freak cop on a rampage! I like that angle!
The cop called Dragon certainly didn't protect his partner, Officer Alex Wilde, wherever she may be.
Now, this issue I had a little problem with. This one I wasn't...
Yeah, three was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, this one I wasn't...
Because one and two is pushing the story forward. You're really getting to know who...
It's a world builder.
You're learning what Chicago is. You're learning the supporting cast. You're learning the land character. And then you get to number three, and it's like, eh.
This one felt like, hey, Eric, my books are coming out real soon, but I need a little heat. Do you mind if you use this character for me? It feels like that, dude, because even Dragon takes some swipes at him. So I'll prove my
case. I don't know that anybody listens.
Dude, he makes
in.
Fun of their wearing. Like, they go, oh, you a superhero? He goes, no, I'm not in that spandex thing.
I think it was Larson trying to end the miniseries on a high note because all the ongoing stories were not going to resolve in the miniseries. He basically came up with a way of giving you an ending episode without actually resolving anything that he set up so far. Yeah, I think in three issues he knew he couldn't wrap it up, so he decided, well, let's go out with a bang. We'll show that Savage Dragon is part of the Image universe and give him a chance to interact with those characters. Hopefully that'll distract you from the fact that I'm not resolving anything that I've set up so far.
Because, I mean, when
you were reading a miniseries, especially back in those days, the expectation was you were going to get a complete story.
Yes.
Usually what would happen is the publishers would put out a miniseries well in advance of any kind of ongoing series, often test the waters to see if they wanted to do an ongoing series. And I think that perhaps Larson might have had some way of trying to resolve the story in three issues, but once the sales came back and they knew that the Image was going to be a viable thing, scrap that, because I've got to save that for the ongoing series I'm going to launch out of this miniseries.
But dude,
he just gave you kind of a throwaway action beat.
You could have launched the series off that second episode, that second issue.
He should have just
where he's laying there in his blood, and the cop says, "Oh God, no."
Yeah.
And then if you want, you do. You know, if the books aren't doing great, do one more issue, ties it up. You throw this crap out. If it does great, then you pick up like from the series. Like it ruined to me the series.
The miniseries, it doesn't help the miniseries itself, I agree. But I think that it was a situation where he gave you basically a throwaway third issue to wrap up the miniseries because he wanted to deal with everything in the ongoing. I just think that the smart move, which Wildcats did very well, was just to decide, okay, we're not a miniseries anymore. We're just going to keep doing this book. Yeah. And if it had been just the third issue of the ongoing series, you might have forgiven it more. But because you're expecting some sort of resolution at the end of the miniseries, you have expectations that aren't going to be met by an issue-long fight sequence.
I just think this is like the dirty Sanchez of the series. characters. It's unneeded. It's just...
It hurt my appreciation for the book at the time. I know
when,
that.
When I when you got me to reread these, the first two, I was after the second one, I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to read the third one. I started reading the third one, I'm just like, Jesus.
A little side trombone.
I was...
You have the right to remain silent.
So this one, we start out with some flaming dude named Inferno.
Who I don't think ever amounts to anything, right? He's just some cannon fodder guy.
No, he
just
pops up and Dragon is... Oh, no. So he attacks the dragon in the hospital.
They're trying to kill him while he's out. Yeah.
And Dragon beats his ass, slams his head against the wall. The cops show up and they're like, who's this? And he's like, oh, some flame dude. Frank and the other officers arrest him. He's like, well, how long have I been out? And they're like, 9 days. And he's like, you know, but your cuts were healed up in a matter of hours. Your body shut down to heal itself. You know, that's cool. I mean, we now know that Dragon has Wolverine power, rejuvenated. Powers.
And well, and again, the problem is they'd established that with the Hulk as well during the Joe Chicks days.
Oh, yeah. So. And, okay, again, real quick. One of my most favorite images of all time of the Hulk is the Hulk versus the UFOs, where one of the UFOs is blasting the Hulk with a blast, and the Hulk is walking forward, and his skin is burning off, and then his the flesh, and then down the muscle, and he gets to the very end. It's a good 25 paces he gets to him, and he grabs the character by his face, and all you see are like bone and a little muscle and charred skin, and he slams it, and I always thought, that's so fucking cool. Like, only the Hulk could get through that shit.
That was a Del Keown, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That is a piece I would love to own. I own some Del Keowns, but that's just... Cabella, bella.
Does being one of Chicago's finest entitle you to destroy public property?
Do your violent tendencies explain why you're the only freak on the force?
Do you realize you just polluted Lake Michigan?
Frank's telling Dragon, hey, man, you got to get back on the street, dude. We need your ass out there. There's one of the hostages that wants to come thank the dragon. And of course, she's big booed, big butt. I mean, the man loves to draw women.
She wants to thank the dragon.
I can only imagine the porn Eric Larson draws. It's just this chick in every color,
well, she's
in every hairstyle.
Mary Jane Watson, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? It is Mary Jane Watson. It has to be. She's a redhead. Yeah. We'll call her Mary Jane. So Mary Jane wants to thank the savage dragon or dragon. She's going out for a kiss. The nurse shows up. And he lets her know. She's like, well, let me know if there's anything I can do. And he's like, I'll let you know. The nurse then wants to go and starts talking about how she knew Mighty Man and boo-hoo, boo-hoo. Mighty Man got killed once they found out his secret identity. Savage Dragon walks out. The press, of course, are attacking him immediately saying, hey, you know, what's going on? How do you feel? This and that. He tells him, like, I'm here to defend the city. But people start asking about his past. What can you tell us about your past? And he can't really tell him anything about his past. So people start assuming, well, maybe you're a thief. Maybe you're a murderer. Maybe you're a rapist or pedophile. And you're just hiding this from us. So then that's what you're starting to kind of wonder, like, well, I mean, his past is really going to come into play because you don't know. You know, could he be one of those, what do you call them, Manchurian candidates where he flips one day and takes over the city or some bullshit? So this one reporter follows him and is trying to get the story and he's telling her to back off and she's apologizing for the other reporters and she's like, please. And he's like, well, and then all of a sudden, Bad Rock punches the dragon. And this is where you hear the bowl flushing. Flush. Flush. This to me is the moment this comic jumped the shark. It was just
the miniseries.
The miniseries. Yes, I'm sorry. Let me correct myself. The miniseries, which at this point had me already like, this is going on my main staple of books I'm going to order every month. I got to have it. This one hurt me a little bit. I think I picked up the other issues only after they come out for a bit and I started reading them and I got back into it. But Bad Rock punches the dragon and starts talking shit. And we all know that Bad Rock is what, like a 10-year-old or fucking 12-year-old?
I think they established him as being an older teen ultimately. I'd always gotten the impression that he was partly because of his way he talks. I thought he's like 10 or 11, but I think they established him at like 16, 17 ultimately.
Okay. Well, anyway, so he's punching Bad Rock's punching Dragon. Dragon's starting to beat the shit out of him. Okay. Bad Rock is wearing gloves. White gloves.
Yeah, he looks like Mickey Mouse or something.
Is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen. Did Ben Grimm ever wear gloves?
Not to my recollection. You really want to see the Rocky fist.
Because honestly,
point.
The only time I've ever seen gloves is Joe Fixit.
Yeah.
Joe Fixit had to wear gloves.
And it worked for Fixit, yes.
And we wear gloves, damn it. I wear gloves during the cold. So, it's just so fucking bad. So they're fighting.
It's an issue-long fight between Bad Rock and Savage Dragon.
Punchy, punchy, kicky, kicky, breaky, breaky. Some more punchy, punchy. A crotch kick. Nice. Little change up there. Punchy,
were there a
punchy.
Lot of spreads, too? A lot of two-page spreads over this year?
We started kind of cheating near the end where we're doing a lot of silhouettes.
Yeah. You know,
punchy, punchy. More kicky, kicky.
They like end up like an elevator shaft or something.
Whoppy,
yeah.
Whoppy. And then, of course, this is a scene where these kids are like, cool, it's a hero, and they're Spawn, and he's like, what? Spawn assumes they're talking about, and again, this is their whole world building where we're all linked. So I got a young blood I'm fighting, I got Spawn from McFarlane.
Well, now remind me that this is the scene where Rob and Eric, the little kids, are rushing towards Spawn when he's incognito wearing a tr- trench coat and hat, and they're like, oh, look at Hero. And Spawn's like, how do they know it's me? And they rush past him, and it's a bank of TV showing the Savage Dragon. Yeah. Now, did that sequence happen in Spawn comics
as well?
This is like another version of that?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't remember if that was vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Now, size wise, Savage Dragon is way smaller than Bedrock, Badrock, whatever the fuck he is.
By the way, that sequence is completely out of left field because it's just a distraction over the course of the Badrock.
Oh, yeah. I thought this issue
kind of shoehorned in.
Yeah, this issue felt like, hey, look, we're showing you we're all connected. Yeah. It's world building.
And filler.
Yeah, So anyway, more punchy, more kicky. And then at the very end, Bedrock's like, stop. We're good. I was just here testing you to see if you could be a Youngblood. And Dragon's like, pretty much like, fuck you. You and your little
tights. That's the stupidest goddamn thing I've ever heard. Yeah. You're under arrest for assaulting an officer.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You're under arrest. I love this fact. He goes, it happens in Marvel comics all the time, where the two heroes battle it out. Uh-huh. So nicely, you know, take a shot.
Little dig.
Savage Dragon arrests him, puts him in cuffs. He goes back. The blonde girl he met at his apartment's like, my mommy won't.
Well, don't forget too, he got bailed out by Shaft.
Oh, no, we're not there yet.
Oh, okay.
You're jumping ahead.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So he's coming home and she's like, can I stay on your couch tonight? He's like, well, let me talk to your mom. She's like, please, no. I think she has a black eye. I can't tell. The artwork's a little rough on this one. And Dragon takes her into the room. Soon there's some gonna happen there. Layfield shows up with his android.
Shaft shows up.
Yeah, Layfield and what's his name?
Is it Die Hard?
Die Hard show up and they bail him out and they're kind of telling him, hey, that was really stupid to do. You're going to have to pay for all that damage. Again, if you cut out that whole middle part and you just went from where he beats up the dude in the hospital and then jumps to the very end with Frank, you have a decent book. Mm-hmm. You take out all that garbage in the middle. So Frank's
the issue-long fight.
Yes.
With
punchy, pow.
Or he's still Bedrock at this point, or is he Bedrock already?
I don't give a shit anymore at this point.
Just explain quickly who Bedrock and Youngblood is.
So Bedrock, or Badrock, however you want to name him.
Not sure what she was at this point.
Yeah, I think by this time, I'm sure he had to change the name. I'm sure, you know, the Flintstones were coming after that that Layfield money. So he is their version of the Thing. He's a big rocky dude. But he's more of a concrete.
Yeah, but who's there? Who's Youngblood?
Layfield. You do some talking, Frank.
Okay. Youngblood is the government superhero team that has all the celebrity superheroes that are America's heroes, essentially. Badrock is a young man whose mind is in the body of a big rocky creature who's one of the more famous members of Youngblood. He's a big bruiser.
And he wears gloves. And he wears white gloves.
In this issue, anyway. I don't remember if that was in the other.
No, he does in the other one, too.
He does in Lightfield comics, too?
The Youngblood stuff we talked about. Okay. I remember that was my biggest gripe, was like, why would the fuck would he wear gloves? Like, that makes no sense.
Because he doesn't have all the cool breaks in his rocks, so
he looks like concrete.
He needs something to make it. Yeah,
if you were to imagine a street to look like a human person or a humanoid, that's what Badrock looks like.
He looks like Jim Chadwick's concrete, which was also a variation on the Thing, but much more of a real life. Yeah, like what would it really be like to have a big rocky creature in our world?
I'm going to reread them because I remember you turned me on to them and I actually liked them a lot.
Yeah, I loaned you mine if I remember correctly. They did a series of reprints.
I ended up buying them.
Buy them? Okay.
Yeah, because I remember you gave me like a little Dark Horse 48 page or something like that, and it had like different stories in it. And I remember reading and I was like, I love the artwork. I thought the artwork was great. And I'm like, and it's kind of cool because he wasn't super powered and he was just like, fuck, man, I'm stuck in this giant rock suit and I got to live a day to day life.
Yeah.
And there's no real adventures, villains or anything. It's just, how do I get to the toilet?
Right.
I mean, I think the book was like him just doing day to day shit in his house, breaking shit, like trying to make toast and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is so fucking cool. And I ended up picking up the series because of that, because you gave me some fucking little 48 page book, and I don't even think you wanted me to read that one. I think you're trying to point something else out, like a Jim Starlin or maybe somebody else was in there. But I just remember those are one of those books that the real life aspects of what a superhero would go to, the day to day life, sometimes is more interesting than the adventures they have. I just remember it was like 4 or 5 panels, pages of he was trying to make toast and he broke the toaster. He sat in a chair and he broke the chair. I think at the end he ends up making a chair out of like cinder blocks because he can't sit down anywhere. That's so cool to think, like, if you were to have those powers, you'd have to come up with these fucking just how to live in your own fucking house. Like, it's not like the
how does it work practically for
that
to
it's not like Marvel Comics where you come home and Mr. Fantastic has created everything you'll ever need and you don't have to worry about all these
unstable day-to-day molecules, fix everything.
So I remember just falling in love with that book. But
Youngblood, it's not that. It's completely in a superhero universe, completely enabled.
Two heroes beating each other up, wrecking the city. It's almost like, it's okay. He'll pay for the damages. Now, the ending of this book, again, I said if you were to cut up all that bullshit from the middle, the ending was interesting because you have Frank asleep, the officer. His phone rings. He answers the phone, and someone on the other line starts telling him how, basically discussing how does he feel knowing that he's the cause of the death of his cousin.
Mm.
And he's like, "What do you mean?" And the character begins to tell him how, well, you're the one that you wanted Savage Dragon to be a cop, but he didn't want to be a cop. So what did you do? Well, maybe you did. Maybe you set him up with your cousin. And guess what? Guess who called us to let us know that his cousin was ripe for the picking? Could it be you, Frank? Did you let us know? Because you knew we would go there and rough him up, but I bet you didn't think we would go as far as we did. Kind of basically just golding him, saying, you're the reason that your cousin died. And so Frank's like, well, what do you want? And he just hangs up.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they're keeping him in line. Basically, he's
fucking with his head.
Yeah. And the guy's name, his name's Skullface. The one we couldn't think of was Skullface. So Skullface was fucking with
descriptive.
Frank. I kind of like that. You're right. Out of all the books that came out, Larson's was the better written right off the bat. I mean, he already had this.
He
nice
had the goal. Most fully realized world. He didn't feel like he was trying to figure it out. He figured, if anything, he'd already figured it out so well that you're trying to catch up with where he's at. And he's not necessarily giving you all the information you need.
I mean, he's already playing up one of our heroes is in trouble for committing a crime. And you know, somewhere down the line, he's going to be. I mean, he's already building these up where the other books were kind of like, well, Velocity, she dropped an apple and she got hit by the Mercs and the Mercs took her.
Right.
And it was just like, it felt like an 8-year old was telling me a story compared to like not a complex story, but it felt like I was getting a fully fleshed out story with Larson, except for that middle bullshit, punchy punchy in the spawny part.
Also worth noting with Super Patriot that in the second issue, thanks is given to Fabian Nicieza for helping to develop the character of Super Patriot.
Oh, really?
Because Larson and Fabian Nicieza actually created that character for Marvel. And when Marvel passed on their Freedom Force pitch, they ended up porting a lot of that material over to Image, specifically the new version of the, I think the character's name was Crimson Dynamo, the member of the,
the
old
Russian
soldiers. They were
Soviet.
No. He was an old World War II era character that worked with the U.S. government. And then as he aged, he started playing a game of, what's that, the world's most dangerous game where they would hunt humans. But in the Marvel Universe, they hunted mutants. And at one point, they captured Storm and tried to hunt her in the woods. And she ended up turning the tables on them, even though she didn't have any powers, and got them all arrested.
Eric Larson designed Super Patriot to be the new version of
Crimson Commando
from the X-Men comics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, Crimson Dynamo was
Crimson Commando,
part of a new version of Freedom Force, the group that Mystique had turned the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants into a clandestine operation for the government. So they changed their name to Freedom Force. And then after Mystique's version broke up, then these guys like Crimson Dynamo
Commando,
part of the group. And then they did a backup in a series of annuals. You know how Marvel was doing the annuals where four annuals would connect and tell one story? So they were doing a backup where they're going to set up a new version of Freedom Force, and went on a mission to the Middle East where he was chopped to pieces, and we're setting up him becoming a cybernetic superhero. But the designs that they put together for that character revision ended up becoming Super Patriot instead, once Larson went to Image.
So that established that Super Patriot was working for Cyber Data, and Cyber Data had been hired by the Overmaster, the Overlord. What was
Overlord,
that guy's name?
I think.
And Overlord was Dr. Doom.
Pretty much.
But as Kingpin instead of as a monarch. But otherwise, he talks the same. He calls people dolt. Is just like Dr. Doom, just a different color scheme.
Yeah.
And he'd hired Cyber Data to get rid of these guys that were giving him trouble in his organization. They'd gotten too big for their britches, and to also kill the Savage Dragon. And since only one of the three guys got killed by a Super Patriot, he fired Cyber Data and said, if you guys come to my town again, I'll destroy your entire operation because I don't work with incompetents like you.
Okay.
We'll meet sooner than you think, Dragon, for you're about to receive a formal invitation. I hope you'll honor me with an RSVP.
Let's just do this. Imagine from the stories you've told me, the franking you've given today, that we go back, we're Marvel, and Silvestri walks up and says, hey, I got this group called Cyber Force. Sure, we'll give you a little four-parter, but we don't.
No, they just flat out said, we're not going to do that.
No, but you're not listening to my full story.
Okay.
So you can answer it then. You're trying to frank me. You're pre-franking. Calm down. So you're working at Marvel. Mark Silvestri walks up and says, hey, man, I got this group called Cyber Force I want to do, kind of like the X-Men, And you say, you know what? Sure, we'll give you a four-parter, but we own the characters now. And then you got Eric Larson and him walk in. Hey, I got this character name. We're doing Freedom Force, and we're going to revise
all your characters and make them cool.
But we're going to add these new concepts, these new looks. I'm pretty sure he would have had Savage Dragon in there if he could have had Savage Dragon in there. I don't think he.
I think he was holding. Well, for starters, he actually had the copyright to Savage Dragon because of the graphic fantasy miniseries that he had done and the stuff he'd done with Gary Carlson over at Megaton.
Okay.
So he firmly had the Savage Dragon copyright. He'd have had to make a point of signing over that character to Marvel, and I don't think he ever wanted to do that.
Now, let's say you run over and you're now working at DC. and Layfield walks up with his young blood saying, hey, this is what I want to do with your
the Teen Titans.
Teen Titans.
Yeah.
But I'm going to redesign them to look like this. Where's Image today? That happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
you got Savage Dragon, maybe.
Yeah.
You got Spawn, definitely. I don't see Jim Lee jumping ship.
Yeah, because, I mean, you need it. Well, yeah. Yeah.
I know this is a what if. I'm just saying because I literally have a box full of what ifs that I'm
Right. I know. It's honestly, that's a really sad thing because they would have just done. Basically, it's Rob Liefeld with Deadpool, where he gets suspended of his career feeling bad because Marvel owns Deadpool and it'll always be the child he sold. You know, the thing that Rob Liefeld will always be the most famous for is owned by Marvel Comics, and he'll only ever have a tiny piece of it, where he owns all of Youngblood, but they never quite caught fire the way the Deadpool ended up doing, the way the X-Force ended up doing. And so he sold off these children to Marvel, and they'll always be Marvel's and never be his. I think that it would just been a painful regret for those creators, and the ones that they did let get away remains, I think, a painful regret for those creators. I'm thankful that the Image creators own the characters that they own, that they continue to have them, be free, and make money for them. And
but Image wouldn't have existed, right? Pretty much.
I think Image would have still existed. It just would have been in a somewhat different form. I don't think that Image would have had the impact if Liefeld was off doing something at Marvel or DC. But the whole reason why Image happens in the first place is because Marvel pissed off Rob Liefeld. So he still managed to pull something together and get Image to happen. So there's a good chance. I think Image still happens. Even if those properties are at other companies, I do think Image still happens because these guys all had backup plans. They all had backup properties, backup characters that they could have done something with. And if they're giving it their full attention, I think some of the creators would have been better off if they had sold off those concepts to Marvel instead of trying to realize them at Image, because some of the creators, Mark Silvestri comes to mind. I don't think Cyber Force was the book to launch with. I think that if he had launched with something like Darkness, he might have had more traction earlier on than he ended up having.
True. Yeah, but with Darkness, I personally think it was the Garcinis writing, because that was just...
Yeah, well, it was a good premise. I think it was well served by having a writer develop it, and I don't know if it would have been as good if Sylvester had come out right out of the gate with that, but I don't think Cyberforce was the strongest concept. No. And I think that leading with Cyberforce may have hurt him because he had to kind of reinvent Top Cow a few years later as the Wild Witchblade Company.
That's a really good point, man.
Yeah. So sometimes, in some instances, they would have been better off, perhaps. But I think that if Rob Liefeld had led with Deadpool, that might have been a big thing for him, bigger than even the Youngblood ended up being.
So, okay, then I give you that. Rob Liefeld doesn't take Deadpool to Marvel. He creates it for Image.
Yeah. The problem being, though, is Deadpool without Fabian Nicieza? If he doesn't peel off Fabian Nicieza to do it, is it the same thing? What? And frankly, Deadpool, even with Fabian Nicieza, isn't the same character. It really isn't until Joe Kelly at Marvel does that.
Really?
So does Deadpool happen even with Liefeld? You know, I think that Deadpool happens because he's a Marvel character.
So you're saying his voice wasn't found until those other artists?
I think Joe Kelly's the guy who really made Deadpool what he became. I don't think you have... Deadpool always had popularity. He had a great visual. I was a fan of Deadpool from the very beginning. But I think Chapel's a really cool looking character. I still really think I'd like to read more stuff about Chapel. But Chapel never really happened, right?
He was never fleshed out.
Yeah. It never really worked out. I don't think you have Deadpool without Joe Kelly. And I don't think you have Joe Kelly without Marvel.
No, that's a very good point. Yeah, because then, so you're basically, well, from what I'm gathering here is you're saying that Deadpool would have never got his voice without the mixture of Kelly and Fabian and all them mixing together.
Well, and it's just like Cable. Liefeld ultimately did a port of Cable over to Image Comics, and several of the Image creators ended up doing their own knockoff versions of Cable, but they never became Cable because Cable isn't Cable without the New Mutants. Cable isn't Cable without him coming in to revitalize and give a new direction to a property that people had already invested in. So it doesn't always work. Sometimes you need a context for a character to have traction.
And that's what it feels like to be franked. Good, man. That's a good one, dude.
Yeah, I like
it. That's a good one at the end.
I don't know where that's going to go. It might end up...
Supposing. You are listening to the Savage Fincast. My name is Jim Purcell.
I'm Craig Olson.
I'm Raven Perez.
This is a podcast dedicated to our favorite comic, Savage Dragon. See, I watched some of the Savage Dragon cartoon when I was really young. The cartoon got me into the comic.
I've been an Eric Larson fan even before Savage Dragon, and it was just a natural progression. Once he helped found Image and start Savage Dragon up, I was aboard. Love every minute of it.
Really got into his Amazing Spider-Man stuff. You know, he became my favorite artist because he's just a guy that's always stuck with the comic art form, and it's just been a joy to kind of follow him through Savage Dragon. I'm happy to be part of this podcast.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We are Finn-ished.
And we're sorry if we offended anybody. Thanks for goofing around with me, guys.
Oh, stop. Please, Jim, end it, please.
I have to point out, too, that you and Mac just completely annihilated me. I was just a spit roast between you two when it came to Eric Larson. Because every time I tried to say any fact about Eric Larson or try to counter any fact that you presented about Eric Larson, I was wrong, and you guys just owned me left, right, and center.
Like when?
I was fucking airtight between you two guys, I swear. You know, you guys, you always talk about me franking you, but I was just wrong over and over again. You guys just completely were annihilating me with on the last time we talked about Eric Larson.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got to listen to that.
Every time I try to say something about the Cosmic Spider-Man, or the Tri-Sentinel shit is like, oh, you must have been talking about the Adjective of Spider-Man, and Mac would be like, no, I'm talking about Amazing Spider-Man. It's like, and he's right. And it's like, well, my grasp of Eric Larson's early career was pretty shit.
Really?
Yeah. And you guys just obliterated me. You guys franked the shit out of me.
Oh, wow, so, man. I feel good now.
I felt like the girl between the two guys from Night at the Roxbury, which, boom, 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 what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Because y'all were just fucking owning my ass. I didn't get around to publicly stating that in that episode. So just to clear the year right now. Right. If you listen to the Dragon episode that covered feeling, you know, the early career of Eric Larson, I knew jack shit and you guys knew all.
So Frank got bukkake'd on this one.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. I was swimming in semen, yes.
Oh, that's a fucking sick visual.
It's time for another trip to the spawning ground. We got a Google Plus One from The Hammer Strikes, Facebook attention from Joe Crawford, Ali Batts, Derek William Crabb, and Gene Hendricks, retweets and likes from AJ March Star, Bone Dragon Comics, Bones Cafe, D. Parvez, Fanholes Podcast, I Am Grant Richter, Joe Crawford, Kaiser Leo, The Man on the Wall, and Sean Phillips. Odell Abner Dracula sent us a picture of a light blue tinged marker and wrote, "It's the fault of Rolled Spine Spawnometer that I see this color in think overkill." Son of Cthulhu wrote of the Brigade episode, "Sounds like a bad time." Joe Crawford wrote, "Very cool. This one is mostly uncharted territory for me. I know that I had to have read some Brigade, but I can't remember a thing about it."
Okay, so we've got Twitter Lovin' from Trekker Talk, Backseat Directors, Silver and Gold Podcasting Network, History of Comics on Film, Rad Adventures Podcasting Network, 20th Century Geek, It's Plastic Man, Justice First Dawn, Siskoid, Yoarte S. We got a comment from History of Comics on Film that basically just showed a picture of the Brigade team having been essentially slaughtered by Bloodstrike, which is something coming up. You remember that art?
Oh, yeah, I remember that, vaguely.
Striking bit of promotional imagery.
I think, Image was one of the first that they'll actually kill off their team. Well, no, they did the Marvel thing, though, right? The team would come back a few issues later.
I think ultimately reanimated. They did that. Bloodstrike was
cool because they got reanimated because they were technically zombie. They would just bring them back over and over and over, which I thought was cool.
I'm not sure how it worked with Brigade. We'll read those issues eventually. But yeah, I appreciated that Image was a little bit more bloodthirsty because we were tired of that at Marvel, especially kill somebody and bring them back. But
DC as well.
Yeah, but they had two problems with that. One was that it, to some degree, made their characters seem disposable because they were often already analog and not always the most imaginative analogs. And so when you kill them, it's like, well, of course you can kill them because who cares? Or you kill them and bring them back, and then it's still the same problem that they had with the other two companies. So they basically couldn't win going that route that early on, I think.
But I'm telling you, heroes coming back as zombies. Fucking fantastic.
Of the poster, Norberto Brown added, "That's the classic Rob Liefeld mouth."
We also got a comment from Justice First Dawn. "Brigade, ah, good times. No one said I was an expert on good taste." Rosie Gil Piquero Galvez, the 108th Sage, Chuck as in Charles Forsman, Cash Flag, Ali Bat, Ava Zornica or Michelle Fife, The Hammer Strikes, Biko Django, Edmore Teal Productions, Edmore Indie Comics Fan, Inigo Montoya, Edmore Jr. at Miskatonic, and at Marvel Bronze Age. Dean at Dean Art Double X wrote, "Smoke screens can be an artist's best friend." Pretty big in the 90s, eh?
Yeah.
Jeffrey Brown, Longbox Crusade, Odell Abner Dracula, Nathaniel Wayne, Merch, spelled with a U, Longbox Crusade, Kaiser Leo, Joe Crawford, Transform and Rollout, Steve Sellers, Mike Radliff, Nethead, Son of Cthulhu.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people,
right?
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one.
Quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey. What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly saw sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And JD.
You can find us at superheroespeak.com, and you can download it anywhere podcasts are available. Everyone, thanks for listening. As always, don't let your cape get caught in the door.
We've seen the Marvel movies. We're discussing Marvel DC movies. And my question to you was if Image had any movies coming out.
Yeah.
Because and we know they got the TV show. They got Walking Dead.
Yeah.
They've had some animated cartoons, I believe.
Yeah, but we're talking about in recent memory, though, right?
Well, no, because the cartoons really pertain to what we talked about, you know, the early Image
but,
stuff.
Yeah, that's cool and all, but I mean, you're talking about what's... Are you talking about it over the history of Image, or are you talking about what's, like, currently in development?
Currently, if there's anything...
Okay. Todd McFarlane says that he's directing the Spawn movie this year, if I recall correctly. My understanding is that Spawn doesn't speak throughout the movie, and he's doing it more of as a low-budget horror-type feel, as opposed to doing, like, a superhero-type movie. And I kind of feel the same way. I don't know that we need Spawn the horror movie. I think that we need Spawn the superhero horror movie, you know, like a Blade kind of thing, maybe.
Not even do it like Supernatural. Like, make it a supernatural aspects.
Dark fantasy.
There you go, dark fantasy.
But not like an actual cheap-ass horror film.
No, I'm thinking like Paranormal, one of those movies. I'm just like, I am not going to sit through that shit. PG-13, go fuck yourself.
Well, I think he's set on doing a hard R, is from what I understand. I just don't have a lot of confidence.
I don't either. Yeah. I don't. Especially with McFarlane directing it. I'm sorry. If you're going to get a director, go get one of these young guys like Marvel has been doing. Get someone that's fresh ideas. Todd, you had your time in the sun. Like, the 90s are yours, I mean, man. You own the 90s, man. But
he directed some animation in his day. He did that Pearl Jam video and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a world difference between what you can get away with animation and what you can do with live action involving actors.
Last time I saw someone like a Frank Miller decide to direct The Fucking Spirit,
yeah,
man, that was a travesty, dude. That was, oh God, that was like an abortion of films, and it was horrible. And to see Samuel Jackson in there, I saw the movie not too long ago, maybe a year ago, and we watched it as a goof and couldn't even get through it. We were making fun of it. We had to stop because it was so bad.
Yeah, I've only ever seen it in pieces.
That's the way it should be watched.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it wasn't very good. The other thing though is that I think over a year ago, I think it was around early 2016, Rob Liefeld announced that his universe of characters had been optioned, and he's been saying that we're going to hear something in the relatively near future about those,
like,
you know,
a Youngblood movie or what?
I don't know. I would assume that Youngblood would be one of your touchstone characters you'd want to do, yeah. But I mean, he might also be looking at some of the properties that were revitalized by indie creators, maybe like a Prophet or Boy or something.
Honestly, the reason I brought this is because I was thinking about it. You could do, like, you know, they've done Red, they've done Losers. They're not big budget. They still have recognizable actors in there. Like, you can watch them like, look, it's Chris Evans before it was Captain America. But you can get some relatively fresh young actors. You could do, I wouldn't do a Youngblood movie. That's pretty, that's too Avengers.
Teams are tough.
I
think Justice League proves that maybe jumping into teams is not the smart way of going about that. Build your individual properties.
I don't want to say low budget.
But a Supreme movie would have been so cool. And, you know, Zack Snyder could have done a Supreme movie.
He has to be evil.
He just has to be scary and
arrogant.
Violent.
That's
what I'm saying. Zack Snyder would have been great for a Supreme movie. Is Superman?
Well, he did. His movie is Midnighter and Apollo. It's not Batman and Superman.
It's not cool enough. It's not dark enough. It's not edgy enough.
If they were blowing each other in one scene, you would have been like, that's Midnight and Apollo.
Yeah. Also, Invincible's got a movie that's in the works now.
I don't know if I want to watch that. I've read all the books. Mm-hmm. It's a good series.
Did you actually finish it? Yeah. You know the if series has ended now.
Yes,
okay. So you're up all the way up to date?
I've read it all.
How'd you feel about the conclusion? Without going into any detail.
Okay, no detail. There wasn't any really way you could have ended it? Like, I don't know.
Okay.
What was that?
I'm very suspicious that that's not the real ending.
You
because
think so?
You don't end a book at issue 144.
You think it could be like 145, like The Secret?
No, I think it's going to go to 150, relaunch the book to build up to issue 150.
Well, no.
You do that Marvel bullshit where you started with a new number one and then the end of the issue, you got the actual one.
But he's making that fucking Walking Dead money, dude.
But you don't end a book at 144. No book ends at 144.
Maybe he wants to
six
be
issues, one trade's worth of material before issue 150.
Well, no, it was a 12-issue run.
Right, but it still ended with issue 144. And I realize that that could be part of the joke, is he's always wanted to flout conventions with Invincible, always go left where everybody else would go right. But nobody ends on 144, man.
Look, I enjoy Invincible. I
can never get into it.
I
like Robert Kirkman, but I've always struggled to get into everything that he's done besides Walking Dead, because there was always some element that didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And with Invincible, I gave that several trades, and I just didn't care about that guy. I didn't care what happened to him in his life. I didn't care about the universe that was getting built Invincible. I actually had a greater interest in Astonishing Wolfman or whatever that one was.
Oh yeah.
But they fucked me over because they came out with like a zero issue or some kind of sampler book where they spoiled like the first two story arcs. I never got back to it. But Invincible just never was my cuppa. You know, I like the costume design. I think it's a cool looking character. It sounds like a somewhat interesting universe, but it just doesn't grab me though.
I want to say the last.
Well, the book lasted over a decade, so yeah, near the end is a lot of long widespread.
The last 11 trades got really good. Once you had their version of the Avengers and all that shit, like all these weird characters coming in, and then you know, robot betraying and all this other stuff, it got interesting. It kept it interesting. I could see where he didn't want to keep going because it was feeling a little like wasn't much.
You're just
gas
doing
left
it to keep doing it. Yeah,
there wasn't much gas left in the tank.
Well, that and I heard that the reason why he ended it was because he thought his artist wanted to do it indefinitely, and the guy was like, "No, I'd kind of like to do something besides Invincible at some point in my career." And so that's another reason why they went ahead and wrapped it up. But yeah, no, I mean, he wants to have more in his career besides having been the guy who did Invincible for years and years and years. So
yeah, okay,
you know, it makes sense there. But yeah, so that's in the works as well.
Take it away, there. What's your question?
Why do you guys talk about comics so much?
Comic books,
motherfucker! Do you
read them?
18 years. Toothbrush is still fresh.
Did they have sex? Because, I mean, She-Hulk, you know.
Damn it, Tony. We went an entire episode without mentioning Maggot, and then you ruined it.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Batman's got his little fishbowl on his head, but Superman doesn't.
Cyclops was right.
Except when he was wrong.
Master Bruce, you are calm.
I'm going to silently judge all of you.
Shut up, beast. Shut up.
Like, I've read it so many times, you know, it pretty much just crumbled in my hands.
Come on, old chum.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read him?
See, I didn't hate Hellcat until you made me read this miniseries. It was just a joke, but you made it real, Justin. No. You made it real.
I prefer my Dazzler singing, like, Creedence Clearwater Revival songs at Australian bars.
Titty discs. And
but that's what to be known as from now on. Like, I'm going to go into the Marvel Wikipedia and edit it. Whatever it is. Doesn't get better than that.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Now playing on thanospodcast.blogspot.com.
This is a fan-produced, not-for-profit podcast. No copyright infringement is intended. Any use of copyrighted materials believed to be covered under fair use. If you don't agree, you can go straight to hell!
Oh yeah, this is the last one.
Wanda!
Oh, you asshole.
Wanda!
That wasn't bad, actually.
One more. Jesus. Wow, dude, that actually hurt.
Yeah, that hurt me too, but you can try.
It's okay. It's because he does the shit. The louder he talks, the closer he puts the mic.
Right.
The quieter he talks, the further away the mic is. It's the most bizarre fucking thing I've ever seen. You literally just stuck the mic in your mouth to yell once. The mic didn't have to go anywhere.
I heard a cavity.
Wait, are you part of AB Conversation? Because you can see your ass out real quick.
I'm just saying. You did it. Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
You might want to cover yours up.
They're covered, unfortunately. It's not a challenge, okay?
Was that super loud? Was that super loud on those things?
Yes.
You told me to yell.
I did. I know. I did this to myself. Because I'm always thinking you're going to yell from here, and as I said, no, you're going to actually...
I was like, nah, better not.
Well, no, remember you're doing the Al Simmons. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, but I was gonna, you know, go in the corner.
Of course you're not. Of course.
Okay. That actually hurt my throat. Ready?
Sure.
You sure. That's from bed.
Wanda!
Okay.
Spawn. You've been listening to Spawnometer. Spill the spawn.
I like that.